Well, we are back for the last session of the day, and for that we have really two interesting people of the hockey world right here. We have Sean McLeod and Jen Vigan. My name is Sergio, I'm from Spain. Here with me is Cedric, who's gonna co-host the season with me. And first of all, I wanna say both Sean, Jen, thank you so much for being here today for the Year of the Youth Huddle. It may be a little bit weird, particularly for Shane, but I want you to please introduce yourself. Maybe there should be enough people here that already know you, but for those who don't, just explain a little bit where you come from, who you are, what have you been done for the last years.
Sure. So, my name's Shane McLeod. I was born in New Zealand. And coached the New Zealand team, the New Zealand men's Black Sticks team, from 2007 through to 2012. And then I moved to Europe and had been working with the Belgium Red Lions from 2015, so 10 months before the Rio Olympics. I picked up the team and took them to there, We won a silver medal, but in many ways we felt as if we lost a gold medal when you play those type of games. And then I continued on with the team for the next 5 years. If you've seen the Red Lions, it's a fantastic team to work with, immensely talented. And so I've been lucky enough to work with them over the last few years. It's not only a very successful sporting team in Belgium, it's also managed to climb to number one and plays a really nice, attractive style of hockey. So that's kind of what I've been busy with for the last sort of 6 years, and now I'm just taking a little bit of a break from international hockey for a year and just trying to refresh and look at what's next for me.
That's amazing. We'll talk about that in a minute. Jen?
Hi, I'm Jen Began. I am currently the assistant coach of the Canadian U21 women's team. So we're just recently back from our Pan American Championships, which we won, which was pretty historic for field hockey in Canada. It's never happened before. And looking forward to World Cup coming up in December. So just preparations for that. And I'm also Field Hockey Canada's true sport manager, which is basically a collect-all term, meaning I'm in charge of a lot of sport development here. So I work in coach education and umpire development and work on player pathways and gender equity and just a bunch of areas around sport development here in Canada.
Amazing. The first question I want to ask both of you is, how did you start it? With hockey, I guess you started both playing hockey, and most importantly, how did you make the switch from playing to coaching and the multiple things you do? Jen, if you want to.
Yeah, I started playing. I was an athlete. I played in junior nationally and I played in the NCAA university in the United States. And then I left hockey for a really long time. I actually have 2 degrees in architecture. So I left hockey completely and worked in sport architecture for probably about a decade and kind of was involved in hockey recreationally and coaching, but I never really took it seriously. And then a mentor of mine recommended that I start taking there's a coaching program here in Canada called the Advanced Coaching Diploma, which is really kind of like high performance coaching development. And so I started taking that on the side of my architecture job and just kind of slowly moved away from that industry and got more and more into hockey. And then for the last kind of 6 years, I've been full-time working in the hockey world and have left that other side completely.
Yeah, so my story, I was introduced to hockey by my aunt. My auntie was very close to me when I was growing up, and she was the manager of the New Zealand women's team. So I used to get dragged along to the hockey field all the time. And so I was constantly with a stick and ball and constantly watching hockey games and being around in that environment, and I fell in love with the game. I liked the fact that it's played by both genders. I enjoyed that it has quite a family sort of connection and so on. So I felt, you know, always an affinity with the sport. And then as I grew, I started to play the game. And I probably played my first official game when I was 11, which is relatively late, I guess, for the European people, because I think they enter clubs around 5 and 6 and so on. But starting that late, playing official games was quite good because it let me play other games and things like that. So I learned to enjoy a lot of different sports and so on. And then once my I started playing the game, and one of the things that used to frustrate me a little bit was that if training sessions or if people that were in coaching positions weren't running a good training session, I would often try and help out and try and come up with some ideas of what we could do and things like that. And it wasn't uncommon to have players kind of coaching the team at the time. And so I did a bit of a stint where I was player coach. And even when I arrived in Belgium my first time, which was in 99, I was player coach of a club. Like you'd struggle to do that now because it's not something that's done. But because I was able to do that, I kind of integrated into the club life very quickly because I was always at the club and doing a lot of things with the youth and so on. And so that was kind of my transition was quite a natural one. And the thing I actually found the hardest was to stop playing and actually take the step from player to coach. I probably, in a way, I'd been coaching for 5 or 6 years before I started to coach. That was kind of how I got into it. And probably the biggest leap I made was to travel to Europe, you know, from New Zealand, which is it's a beautiful country, but it's a bit isolated. And so when I got the travel bug and went to Europe, I used hockey as my ticket in a way. And from there I was exposed to a whole lot of different styles and it was a bit like a child in a lolly store. You kind of, everywhere you looked, you were taking on new information and different stimuluses, and it was fantastic. So that's kind of how I got into my coaching aspect of the game.
And it's been quite a journey for the both of you. But when you went from playing into coaching, what was the part you underestimated the most of being in that role as a coach? Now, if you look back on it, Jen, if you want to go first.
Yeah, for me, it was probably the planning. I mean, you know, there are so many spreadsheets and emails involved in coaching. There's just a lot of stuff that goes on behind the scenes, and like when you're an athlete, you only see a really small fraction of what actually happens behind the scene in planning a program. So like for every hour of training on the field, there's probably 3 hours put into the preparation behind the scenes. And it's just something that you're not really aware of when you're an athlete.
Yeah. For me, I think the pathway for a coach for how I experienced it was that things happen, you learn things gradually. And one of the things I've been quite lucky to do is to have a couple of people that have been quite good mentors. And so what Jim was talking about with the planning and so on, I was lucky enough to work as an assistant coach for a period of time with someone that was very good at doing presenting of a briefing, a game plan and so on. And so it was eye-opening how much detail and how much depth can go into those type of preparations. So I agree with Jen. There's a lot that happens in behind, but the world of the coach is a really exciting one, and it's very rich And when you get to experience just that look behind stage, there's some really cool things about that, the planning of a session, the working with people and understanding what drives them, what really motivates them to make the sacrifices they do to be a high performance athlete. All of that type of thing is a mystery world when you're a player, but you get exposed to it as a coach, and it's a really nice world to be involved with.
Great. And as you both were players and have, I think, loads of coaches during the years, did the coaches you had like kind of formed how you coach now? Did you take any tips, any tricks from them into your coaching style now? Jen, if you want to go.
Yeah, I mean, I think every coach that I've had has impacted in some way or another. I mean, there's always the coach that is the one that inspires you to keep going or helps you through a hard time or is just kind of there to motivate you. And those are just like little pieces that you always take with you, or, you know, you win a championship and little pieces of that stay with you. And you know, you always recall back on the things that made you successful as an athlete or that team successful. And it's something that you can touch back on, but every team is different and every coach is different. So really it's about taking that experience and kind of digesting what was it that worked, why did that work, and how can I apply that to the athletes that I have in my group right now. And for myself as a coach, just applying that in a way that's going to support the group that I have on the field at that time. And so, yeah, I mean, I think every little experience you can use, but it's about making sure that fits with where you're going and the culture that you're trying to build with the program that you have.
Yeah, Jen, I'm going to have to go first at some point because you answered the question really well. The only thing I'd add to that is that you learn from people because of or in spite of, you know, and some of my biggest learnings were probably from coaches that didn't do such a good job, you know. Like I've been in some teams where the coach has done an extremely good job of educating the players, but has probably done a poor job in actually the people management side of things, you know, and it's very difficult to be the complete package. And so, you know, I have a bit of a saying that I coach how I would like to be coached. And so, you know, that captures a few things. It means that if I was a player, I'd want to be involved. I'd want to be invested. I'd want to have I'd want to have a say and kind of be part of what we create, you know. And I think the days are gone where the coach is a standalone type of person. Is becoming much more successful teams are becoming far more collective in their approach, you know, collective with other staff members but also with players involving themselves you know, in all aspects of what you do, because, you know, you as a coach, you have an impact without a doubt. But if you can't create that belief with your team, and if your team don't do all that work outside of the training field that needs to be done to be successful, you'll have a limit of how far you'll be able to take a team. So, you know, the people management stuff is something that when I've been working with very good people, I've watched how do they do that, you know, what makes them have that connection with their players and so on. And you just try and take little pieces of it that fit your personality and your coaching style, just as Jen was saying.
I think that's really interesting. I'm going to go a little bit more in depth on that, because I feel like as a coach, you not only have to motivate each player to give their best, but also you have to motivate each other to give their best for a purpose, which is a team. So I really like what you said about being coached. You coach as you would like to be coached, and that's really interesting. I want to ask both of you, how do you manage having different types of people in the same group? Because maybe you need different types of communication, because maybe one person doesn't matter being more aggressive as a coach or being more direct, but another one takes things a little bit more personally, maybe for younger athletes that are watching. So how do you manage that? Shane, if you want to start now.
Yeah, like I think if you're lucky enough to create a staff rather than a singular person, and it's not always possible to do that, but if you do, the staff that you should look for, it should almost be the opposite of what you are, so that you have a staff that can form a complete unit. And what I mean by that is I'm a relatively calm coach, and I struggle a little bit to go into the red, and some players need that red. They need someone just giving them a clip around the ear and saying, hey, get on with it, you're mucking around, and so on. And so, you know, I have a staff member that can take on that type of thing, and if needed, I can certainly deliver it. But it's trying to work to your strengths, you know, and don't be afraid to be working with someone that's very different than yourself, because I think it works. But the bit that you're talking about, the understanding the player that stands in front of you, is very, very important. And you only can find that out by actually getting to know them well, you know, understanding and watching them and observing them, not always talking at them, but often listening to them about what's motivating them. Why are they in this high performance sport? Why are they doing all these commitments? What do they want out of it? You know, and you learn to understand what buttons to push and when to push them. If you don't do that, it's just random. Sometimes you'll get a good response and you won't know why, and other times you'll get a bad response and the same thing. So, you know, get to know your players, surround yourself with not like-minded people, but people that complement what you're doing, you know, the same drive and the same motivation, but they certainly can be different. Yeah, and try and form a staff that caters for everyone.
Yeah, what he said. that was perfect, Shane. I think I would add to that like, gone are the days of traditional coaching where there was one dictator who told you how to do it and that's what you had to do. It's not the way modern coaching is done. And what Shane said about forming that relationship with the athletes is so important, but it goes beyond the relationship on the field and how they respond to the training or how they respond in pressure situations. Like, I really try to get to know the athletes, you know, what happens behind the scenes, where are they living, how are their roommates, what's their relationship with their family, what stressors are going on. And like, I coach with junior athletes, so a lot of them are still in university, and really understanding what's going on in their life, because they might show up one day and just be like absolutely terrible on the field, and this is not a reflection on them or their abilities, but maybe a reflection on the fact that something's going on in their personal life, or they had a fight with their roommate, or they failed an exam, or there's always other things going on. And if you don't make the effort to get to know them as people, then you can't push them. You don't know what their tipping point is. You don't know how to motivate them. You don't know how to encourage them when things aren't going right. And so that's a really, really important part of coaching. And yeah, again, what Shane said about building that staff and having different people with different abilities and different communication styles is also important, because one coach is never going to completely mesh and relate well with every athlete on the field. There's just so many different personalities.
Absolutely, absolutely. I feel like the focus should be on the different depths that you have as a player, because you're a player, but also you're a person, and you have different things that are going on in your life, and you never know what's going on in someone's mind. But I also wanted to talk about that aspect in terms of being a coach, not only a player, because people seem to only see a coach as a person, or when you are at a national level, the person that maybe selects or helps to select the players and then do the coaching during the game. But there's actually, and you know probably more than this than me about this, about being a coach, there it has a lot more things that you have to do. So I wanted to ask you, is a question from the audience, from Teresa Bukwasi, what surprised you the most about the responsibility of being a coach? What you didn't expect?
I think I walked into coaching eyes wide open, nothing's necessarily surprised me, but there is certainly a lot to it, you know, like I give a simple example of media. So media is a really interesting thing, and it kind of, how media works is they're looking for heroes or villains. You know, they want teams to succeed, but they also, the interesting stories are how teams fail. And so it surprised me the different styles of media and the different styles of questioning that can come along with coaching a big side and so on. And, you know, stuff that falls in between hero and villain is not such interesting stuff. So probably when I first started, the most surprising thing I felt was that the relationships with the media and the outside world was often different than what was happening internally within a group. And so you would have these stories when we were traveling okay about this team that was doing incredibly well and so on. And we would kind of just rolling our sleeves up and trying to do our stuff. But the outside world was trying to pick us up and put us in a place that we weren't quite ready to be, you know? And so I found that your relationship building, it goes in much wider than just your players and things like that. It's how you sell your product or your team or your organization to the rest of the world is something that you have to consider as well. And so I guess that's a little bit of a surprising element. And the higher you get up with your coaching, the more interested media is in how you do it with your teams and creating stories and creating heroes and so on. So if you're lucky enough to take a high performing team, that's something that you have to be ready for.
Yeah, I feel also like I came into coaching, or I started coaching at a higher level with quite a bit of background. Like I come from a coaching family. My dad was an ice hockey coach, so I grew up being very familiar with what it takes. But I think maybe most surprising for me, or maybe not surprising, but the part that I find the most challenging is that as a coach, you have to be knowledgeable in so many different things. I mean, you're the psychologist, you're the nutritionist, you're the person that they come to if they're having problems off the field. You're the person that's counseling the parents in what should I do in this situation. You're, you know, helping with career and education pathways. You're helping through injury management and sports science issues. And you really have to know a little bit about almost everything in order to be able to put the right staff around you that can answer those questions in an educated way, or be able to provide enough information that you're giving enough support to your athletes and their families, and all of those things really impact people's lives. So you just have to be knowledgeable enough to give quality advice without overstepping your bounds.
You both went to quite big tournaments the last year, speaking of the Tokyo and then the Pan American Games. What is the biggest lesson you've learned in that tournament, and why is that the biggest lesson? I'm gonna go off shade.
Yeah, listen. A shootout's never over until it's over. We've learned that a couple of times. Look, the tournament for us tracked pretty well. So, you know, there was no major surprises. Probably the thing that was quite striking was the lack of public. You know, there was it was interesting. Like, it had some positives, and you know, like I love playing in front of a crowd, and I think a crowd can be such a important element in how a game's played, especially if the crowd rides the game and really involves himself in the game. And I've been in a couple of games where the crowd is helped win a game, you know. And so you have that stimulus. And like if you go to India and play in India, you know, the crowd, whenever India get a ball and start is to look like they're going to attack, the stadium erupts. But if you score a goal with them, it's deadly silent, you know, against them, and that's quite an interesting thing to see. And so, at Tokyo, without the crowd, there was kind of a purity about the hockey. You know, like I think that people watching it from home really engaged with the hockey. You know, and I've watched a lot of those games back afterwards, and you just watch the pure skills and the abilities of the players, and you don't ride that crowd type of thing. So I found that a surprising aspect, and yeah, it was a bit strange. But as I said, there was positives and minuses in, about having a crowd or lack of a crowd. It was interesting.
Yeah, for me, I think, I mean, there was lots of lessons to take away, but I think for me, that kind of the old tagline of control the controllables and just really discovering in actual situation that you can't stress too much about the things you can't control. And that really came, I mean, probably for everyone over the last 18 months, because logistically preparing for anything in a global pandemic is an exercise in flexibility and learning how to think on your feet and react somewhat proactively, I guess. And an example for us at the Pan American Championships was transportation. Because of COVID, we didn't have any control of it. So the host organization managed the transportation and sent the buses, and everything was very controlled. And we had a bus driver that got lost, so we missed a training session because he couldn't find the field. We had our bus was 30 minutes late for us leaving the hotel to get to our semifinals, so then rolled into impacting our warm up. And those are just things that we had no control over. So being able to adapt and change and kind of manage the focus and the athlete's kind of mental preparation when things aren't going exactly how they wanted to. And that was a big takeaway for me.
Okay. Talking about the crowd, Shane, you were talking about positives and negatives about the crowd. Do you have anything of an advice for younger coaches on how to deal with a crowd, parents alongside the game, yelling at the kids and at the coach?
Yeah, it's often a tough one because it's not always controllable. But what I find, and I can only really talk from my perspective, I tend to be a relatively calm coach on the sideline, and I think often your players and people that are in your kind of support network, so often parents and things like that, will reflect your behaviors, you know. And I think the reason why I'm calm on the field is on the sideline is I actually need to be calm so that I can concentrate and think how can I best service my players when I get an opportunity to talk with them. And for me to do that type of thinking and get clarity of what I need to say, I need to be calm, I need to be controlled. So in doing that, I think what happens is often the players will look over on the sideline and they see that, oh, look, Shane's fine, he's not yelling, he's in a good place. And I think that's quite comforting. And I think that that can also be reflective of parents and things on the sideline. I think if you are a coach that has a tendency to yell at your players and overcoach them during during the game. I don't mean don't give them support and encouragement and some heads up and elements of the game, but often the parents will mimic a bit of how you behave. And if you're having cracks at your players and constantly yelling at them, it's a bit of a free license for the parents to do likewise. So just be really mindful that you set the tone, and often you are the one that needs to be the best role model about how you would like your parents and supporters to behave. You have to be doing that. You just can't have conversations with them afterwards saying, please don't do that if you yourself participate in that type of behavior. So your first port of call is be mindful of what you do. It has more impact than you realize.
Is there anything you'd like to add, Jen?
Yeah, I think it's so important. And just to add to that an athlete on the that's playing, whose parent is on the sideline screaming at them and directing them, is already feeling a lot of stress. And so, like, as a coach, recognizing that if you add to that, you're actually perpetuating the problem. So building that trust with the athletes so that you have the relationship where you can recognize with them, yes, I understand that this is hard for you and this is stressful, and you know those athletes want to listen to their parent, or they want to listen to that person because they're important people in their lives. But developing that trust with them and that relationship where you can make a comment on the sideline and they'll listen to you is what's going to be the first step to helping them get beyond that. I've been that athlete with the yelling parent, and I've also coached quite a few of them. And if you're also screaming at them from the sideline, who to pass to, when to pass, what skill to use, they're just going to shut down, and they're also not going to learn, to make decisions on their own.
The other thing I'd add to that, if you do get an opportunity to set up a meeting before the start of the season and with the parents and supporters, or those that commonly come to the game, and just outline what you think and your philosophy, that actually goes quite a long way, you know, to having a bit of control over what you want to see on the sideline. And if people are told, then it gives them a chance to react. And fundamentally, it's quite a good thing. It brings them into that involvement of what you're trying to do. You can talk to them about your philosophy of the hockey, but also the expectations that you have of them, because they're very important people, you know, and you want them there, but you want them as part of your staff in a way. You want them encouraging their athletes and not applying that pressure that Jen was talking about.
Absolutely, absolutely. We have a question here from the audience related to that, to building bonds with players, but also with other members of the hockey family. And the question is, working with players that you can build bonds and great moments, when do you know it's time to let a player go? Or how do you separate the more professional side from the personal, I would say?
Yeah, it's never an easy process, that, because, you know, like I think that is often a two-way conversation that the both of the player and the staff have to come to an agreement about, you know, like you can, yeah. It again, if you know your players well, you can understand if there is a deviation from their normal behavior, you know, and sometimes that pressure, again, that Jen was talking about, with, you know, something else is happening in their world that's taking them away from that desire to play and so on. You'll recognize that if you start to know the people in front of you. And then you have a discussion about what's going on, you know, and the team always has to come first. And what I mean by that is the decisions that you take always should be in function of what's best for the team. And you know, there are times when a player just for whatever reason doesn't fit into that culture that you're building and so on, and then you're better off having that talk and either they align themselves with what you're trying to do, or they go search for it somewhere else, and then no one's lost then, you know. But it's not an easy talk to have a coach and a player about that, but it's one that is needed from time to time, you know. It's same with selections. Those are very tough conversations if you're selecting for a particular tournament, and often players have done nothing wrong. It's almost the injustice of high performance sport. You can only take certain number of players to events, you know, and it's but you have to do those conversations correctly. They're never easy to hear from a player, but you have to really look at the practicalities of how you do it, you know. Do it in person, get to the point very quickly, give them time to reflect on what has been discussed, offer a second opportunity to discuss it further, because often an athlete won't hear after the words, "Look, I'm sorry, I can't take you." The rest becomes a bit of a blur. So always offer that opportunity to revisit it, so that if they have some questions that come later, and explain to them as honestly as you can. And don't make up excuses for not selecting them. Sometimes there's just injustices, and explain that. You don't have to make up things to justify a misselection. You know, I don't like coaches that do that. I think it's the wrong approach. So you talk to them very honestly about where they're at.
I would just add to that, Shane, great answer. Just add that I think you need to be extremely clear as early on as possible as to what your metrics are. What are your expectations? What are you looking for? What behaviors do you want to see? What is the direction that this team is going, and what do we want to see from each individual on the field and off the field? And then just to check in regularly, so nothing comes as a surprise. If a behavior starts happening or a behavior becomes consistently apparent that isn't in line with what your expectations are, having those conversations early and being open with the athlete and making sure that you give them the opportunity to realize what's happening and make some adjustments. And then if those adjustments aren't able to be made, or they're not able to meet the expectations, then you need to start having those conversations of maybe it's time to part ways or move on.
Fabulous, indeed. As we see, hockey is now becoming more and more professional throughout the years. How has this been impacting your coaching role? Can you remember how your role was 15 years, 10 years ago? Was it different, and how is it now? Jen, if you want to go.
Sure, I'll go first. Hey, I'm a new kid on the block. So 15 years ago, I was showed up to the field and put a team on there and was cheering from the sidelines. So, I think definitely I've just been learning a lot about kind of the science behind coaching and the science of learning and all of these kind of things that make coaches better, that make communication better, that make, there's always new studies and new things to learn about skill acquisition and how to teach. And for me, that's kind of professionalizing what I do is about learning how to learn and then learning how to put what I'm learning onto the field so that my athletes can also take away and continue to get better.
Yeah, I think probably technology has been one aspect. So you know, you used to be able to rock up to the field with if you had a whiteboard marker and a whiteboard, you were the FIH master coach. But now, you know, with all the technology and all the things that are happening, or all the opportunities to simplify how you coach are there. you know, like the use of video and how it's clipped and so on is a fantastic tool, because players can see exactly what you're talking about and they get greater understanding quicker. So I think what's happening is that the ability to educate has led to very educated athletes. You know, we if I could use the Red Lions as an example, I think that six or seven of those players could easily coach an international side with their knowledge of the game and their ability to present that knowledge in such a simple package, you know, and that's really what's happened over the last 15 years. I think a lot of things in hockey are a bit cyclic. So, you know, some skills go out of fashion and come back in fashion, and as well as the game moving on, but technology has allowed for that process to happen probably a little bit quicker and so on. So yeah, I think that's probably the biggest evolution is that innovation and technology that's being used now rather than 15 years ago.
Absolutely. Unfortunately, we're coming to close to an end, but I want to ask you, since we're talking about past and future, I want to ask you, what advice would you give to a person that is considering to be in a coach, or it's a young coach, or even has a little bit of experience, if there's any tip or trick that you would give them, Shane?
Yeah, like I think... take that leap, you know, like I think that Jen did it. She moved across from her architecture type of situation into coaching, and I traveled from one side of the world to the other, and what I mean by taking a leap is just immerse yourself in it. You know, if you have that love and that passion for what you're doing, find ways to express it. I talk to my children who are quite little children about finding something that you're passionate about, even at this young age, you know, and if you're lucky enough to turn your passion into your career, then that's fantastic, you know. And so if there's people here that are watching that are incredibly motivated and have the love of the game, immerse yourself, take that leap and take on things that are challenges, you know, and in the end, at first you might find it difficult, but in the end you'll get on top of it and then you'll look for a new challenge. And that's what happens. That's how people develop, and it's how you end up where you end up. But yeah, make sure you're passionate about it and be prepared to make a leap.
Yeah, it's funny, Shane. My kids are 7 and 9, and I always tell them hard things are fun. So choose that thing that's challenging and put yourself into a situation where you might not know what it is, or you might be scared to do it, but at the end of the day, hard things are fun, and it's the hard that makes it enjoyable. So yeah, jump in with 2 feet, and then I would just add, find yourself a mentor, find someone that has done what you want to do, and ask questions and educate yourself and learn as much as you can.
Great. Thank you very much. We're already 43, 45 minutes in this session, so this means we're coming to an end. First of all, I would like to thank Shane and Jen very much to be here, sharing your journey, sharing all the knowledge. And to wrap up the entire day, I'd like to give the word to Andre from the FIH Academy.
Well, thank you so much. First of all, thank you, Shane. Thank you, Jen, for joining us this evening. Of course, for you, I'm not sure if it's morning where you guys are. Here in Switzerland, it's roughly almost 10 o'clock. Thank you so much. It's been a great session. It's been very enjoying to listen and to take part in this. I'd like to thank all of you that joined now, this morning, throughout the day. It's been great to see you, your questions, your interactions. And I'd like to give one last thanks to our two amazing partners of the huddle, the EHF Youth Leadership Panel and the Hockey Site. Without them, this would not have been possible, and it's because of their excitement and their dedication that we were able to do this. From our side, it was great fun. It was challenging. So I think I'm ticking all the points that you guys just mentioned. We had our challenge, but it was really good fun to do this. And I just hope to for the next one. Thank you very much for joining.